And welcome, Hoosier fans, to another emergency episode of the Assembly Call. I forgot the siren. Shoot, where's the siren? There it is. There's the siren. That's what we need. It's been a while since we've done one of these, but big news today in Hoosier Nation as Jalen Hood-Schifino becomes the third recruit in the class of 2020 for Coach Mike Woodson. Cue the 50-cent gifts. Get excited, because this is a big commitment for Indiana, kind of the crown jewel of this class, really. Hood-Schifino kind of right on the borderline of being a five-star guy right there, kind of the top of the four-star category. We'll get into, you know, what his skills are, what he brings to the table. But he now joins with CJ Gunn and Caleb Banks in what is currently a three-man class that I think I saw would be number five in the country if Hood-Schifino committed. And obviously a very important commitment for a program that has struggled with guard play. And now when you look at Hood-Schifino and, of course, five-star Tamar Bates, who's a freshman this year, not to mention five-star Christian Lander, who's obviously had an up-and-down time so far but is very talented. Talent in the backcourt now no longer seems like it's going to be a problem in Bloomington. And just a big commitment, a lot of excitement, kind of carries on the momentum that Indiana really has had all offseason. You know, since letting Archie Miller go, the hire of Mike Woodson, was warmly received, obviously, as, you know, Thad Matta came and, you know, made some exciting announcements to the staff. All the players stay. You have all that excitement. And then the good trip in the Bahamas. And now this comes next. And it just continues a really fun, exciting offseason for Indiana basketball fans. And we're going to talk about it here on this emergency episode. The doctor, Galen Clavio, is here. I think Dustin Dupirak may join us later. I don't know if Ryan's coming. I sent him a text. Either way, Ryan will either give us a scouting report now, or you'll certainly get an in-depth one from him on Thursday. But Galen, let me bring you in here. What's your initial reaction to the Jalen Hood-Schifino commitment?
I think it just highlights that panicking in the first 2 months about whether a coach can successfully recruit is probably not indicative of what might happen in the future. I mean, look, this is a big recruit just in terms of number. I think 23rd in the country, according to one rating, top 30 in another. He's a clear four-star, probably borderline five. And that's a big deal under any circumstances. But I think also the fact that this is a player that, you know, Kenya Hunter was recruiting. Mike Woodson jumped on this immediately. I think Jalen Hood-Schifino said something like, you know, Woodson called him like right after he got the job and was like, hey, we're still very interested in you. I think it highlights, A, and Zach Osterman had it in his piece a little bit as well in the Indy Star. Yeah, Mike Woodson can recruit. That's not an issue. Second guard of this caliber or close to it that he's been able to pull in. But I also think it should hopefully silence everybody who was worried about some of those commitments that didn't pan out over the course of the summer. A lot of people were like, this isn't picking up the way that we thought it would. And it just goes to show that you got to give a coach a little bit of time. Things are going to play out probably fairly well. And it seems like to borrow the tweet that I just saw somebody put out, perhaps Indiana did not pay $10 million to get worse, as we were promised that they had by most of the national media.
Oh, yes. That's not going to age well. Not going to age well. And I'm sure people will remind him of that.
I want to give credit. That was Zach Royce on Twitter. So, nice. Zach, thank you for reminding us once and for all on that.
Nice. You know, I see a lot of, you know, Woody is killing it. And you're right. You know, the narrative, even from the beginning, when Mike Woodson was kind of being discussed as a coach, it's like, well, is this older NBA coach going to be able to recruit? And, you know, look, I was, you know, pretty forceful about that. Even when that first came up, I just didn't think that was true, because, you know, the things that players look for now when they're going to a school, I mean, Indiana has a lot of those built in just because of the history, the tradition, you know, facilities that are improving, all that. But also then Mike Woodson's history in the NBA and being able to develop guys, that was always going to be appealing. Let's also not overlook the impact of Kenya Hunter, who is just awesome and is really... Kenya Hunter's probably the MVP of this program over the last 2 years, given what he's done in terms of being a stabilizing force during a coaching change, helping to keep current players there, helping to bring in more talent. Kenya Hunter has just done an unbelievable job. And so, yes, Mike Woodson is killing it, and maybe Mike Woodson gets some of these recruits without Kenya Hunter. But boy, having Kenya Hunter as your lead recruiter is, I mean, it's pretty, it's kind of a cheat code right now because Kenya's just doing an unbelievable job.
And look, hat tip to Archie Miller, who brought Kenya Hunter on staff.
Yes, thank you, Archie.
but look, a bigger hat tip, I guess, to Mike Woodson, who didn't have to keep Kenya Hunter on staff, but saw very early, I think, that this is a guy who has the right connections and knows how to handle them. And, you know, I mean, this is a long-term commitment. I mean, you know, Kenya Hunter had a relationship with Hood Schifino when he was at UConn and was one of the first people that he connected with when he got to IU, from what I read. And so, yeah, I think you have to look at this and look, the whole idea that you need someone who understands how to recruit effectively at this level is frankly something that you didn't get much of, very little of actually during the Archie Miller era until the very end. And then you really didn't get a huge amount of it during the previous couple of coaching regimes either at IU. This is just not something that we've been that used to, at least not consistently. So I do go back to what you're talking about with the Woodson situation. And I say to myself, look, we all felt like this was likely going to be different than, say, St. John's hiring Chris Mullen or Rutgers hiring Eddie Jordan. I mean, and this was always the big complaint about the way that that got handled in the press by the national basketball media, who, you know, if you're not aware, most of them have a professional obligation to prop up other coaches in the college coaching industry. And there's kind of this built-in, almost like it's like an immune system reaction when somebody outside of that who doesn't have that experience comes into the fold. And so it's, you know, it's easy to take shots. And, you know, in April, how are you going to be able to say much of anything counter to that other than, well, we think you're wrong. But I think IU fans have gotten some evidence this month that things are indeed potentially going in the right direction, whether it was this recruit committing today, whether it was the way that the team looked in their games down in the Bahamas and just the upper levels of energy and defensive attention that this team is paying to playing basketball. Obviously still a long way to go, but you know, I'm really excited about this commitment in particular, Jared, because I think it does highlight that A, IU can recruit these types of players successfully. B, IU can recruit players from places where they haven't traditionally gotten them. I mean, the idea that you're pulling in a guy from Montverde Academy, that's a big deal because
1 year after getting Tamar from IMG.
Yes. And this is an area that IU has needed to get into. If IU basketball wants to compete at the level that everybody says that they want to compete at, you want to compete with the Kentuckys and the North Carolinas and the teams in the upper echelon of college basketball, this is where a lot of those players are coming from. And this is where a lot of players who are going in the top 10 of the NBA draft are coming from. Cade Cunningham came from this academy, and he was the number one overall pick this year. IU's got to play in that playground. They've got to be in that environment. And it's important that you be able to go out, get that kind of a player. That player comes in, has a good 2-3 years, however long they're here. And suddenly this becomes an acceptable place for that caliber of player from that background to be able to come and play. And so a lot of really important potential things as we move forward with all of this.
Yeah. A big commitment is not official until Kenya Hunter has tweeted. And Kenya Hunter's tweet in this case is a gif of Kobe Bryant with big eyeballs, which is very, very appropriate. If you're able to watch the video of Jalen Hutchefino's commitment video. And so Gayla and I, we were here on StreamYard kind of watching the whole thing play out. And, you know, the CBS kind of dragged it out and they bring in Jalen Hutchefino and he talks and they bring in Eric Bossy and they're trying to drag this out as long as possible. But then they went to the commitment video and my cynicism immediately was melted away by what was a really touching video, I thought, with Jalen Hutchefino in his Kobe Bryant jersey talking about how much Kobe has meant to him. It's 824. Obviously, those are the two numbers that Kobe Bryant wore. And, you know, had video of his mom, who was an athlete playing basketball, had video of his sister talking about how they're his why. It was a really, really cool video to see. And so, you know, so now we have a backcourt of guys who grew up idolizing Kobe Bryant. It's not bad. Not bad for your basketball mentors to be Kobe Bryant. But actually, I think what that shows, and one of the reasons why I'm really excited about this, and we'll talk about Jalen Hutchefino, the player, here in a second, but you know, you have a guy like Tamar Bates, and I think we've all heard interviews with him, you know, kind of, you know, gotten to know him a little bit. And he just comes across as such a mature guy, but also with kind of a killer mentality as a player, and has talked a lot about the impact that Kobe Bryant has had. From everything that we've seen and heard about Jalen Huccefino, it's very similar. And one of the biggest things Indiana has been lacking is an alpha mentality in its backcourt. Who was the last guy that had it? Yogi Ferrell. Who was the last guard to lead Indiana to a Big Ten title? Yogi Ferrell. And we've had some nice guys. We've had some, you know, players who were skilled, different things. But look at who wins in college basketball. Look, what was the secret sauce for Baylor? They had Davion Mitchell, who was a badass, right? And so, you know, you need some of that in your backcourt. Look at the guys who, you know, the teams that have been really good in the Big Ten of late have had those kind of alpha mentalities in their backcourt. And so now I think when you look at, you know, what we expect Tamar Bates to bring this year for Indiana, what the kind of mentality, you know, same thing with Xavier Johnson. That's why a lot of people were bullish on him. Similar with Jalen Huccefino. It really feels like this staff is targeting not just a particular type of player, but they're able to connect with a particular type of mentality that I think is really going to bode well for what you need to win in college basketball. And that to me is really encouraging, because it's not just assembling talent. You've got to assemble talent, build a culture, have the right mentality. And when that mentality is coming from the guys who have the ball in their hand, nothing against Trayce Jackson-Davis, who I think has done his best to lead Indiana as best he can. It's just harder to do that when you're a big guy in college basketball. You really need that to come from your backcourt. And the profile of the program Indiana's building is a backcourt-driven team.
Yeah, well,
that's what wins.
I mean, you know, drummers might be the most important figures in like a rock and roll band, but what really makes you remember a song is generally the singer and the lead guitarist, because those are the parts that stand out. And that's how it is with guards. I mean, you know, they're the ones that have the ball in their hand the most. They're the ones that are, you know, not always doing the most scoring, but tend to do the most shooting. And so I think everything you just said there is 100% correct. I'll also say, you know, a couple of other things on top of that. One, the idea of having some versatility in terms of what you can do. You know, combo guard used to be a dirty word when it came to players, because it basically meant, well, they're neither good enough to be a point guard or good enough to be a shooting guard. I don't get that sense with Jalen Huccefino. You know, I mean, granted, you can only get so much out of watching YouTube highlights and things of that nature, but even the general comments are, this is a guy that he makes decisions. He goes out and does what he needs to do. He's not afraid to shoot the ball. He can shoot the ball percentage wise. I mean, you know, the numbers that he has put up have been pretty good from a percentage perspective. And I think that that's really important, because that tends to breed situations where that continues on into college. I mean, it's hard to be a poor shooter in the prep school level and suddenly turn it on once you get to the next level of things. And so that all I think is important, but the mentality thing's important too. And it does feel like for a while, IU basketball has had talented players who sometimes lacked the spark or the alpha instinct. I kind of don't like that psychological phraseology, but I know what you're talking about. But the idea of being on top of the game, as opposed to kind of waiting for somebody to lead them. And within this player, it doesn't seem like that's a big deal. Like, this is a player that wants the ball in their hands, but is also able to pass the ball off to somebody else and is willing to be decisive. And you just have to have that in guards. Like, you can have an average guard from a talent perspective if they have the right mindset of what they're doing. And, you know, as big of a concern as that position was when you looked at the future, now, you know, you've got competent guard play this year between transfers and players coming back. And you've got now the heir apparents coming in, and they seem to have all of the characteristics that you would want to continue on and actually build upon what you hopefully will see over the course of this upcoming year. So, yeah, I think it's certainly something to be excited about.
We know a 3-digit number doesn't tell your story. That's why every Progressive Leasing approval is no credit needed. Shop your favorite stores with Progressive Leasing to get what you need, such as furniture, laptops, headphones, jewelry, mobile phones, appliances, mattresses, and more. Progressive Leasing obtains information from credit bureaus. Not all applicants are approved. Progressive Leasing offers lease-to-own purchase options. Acquiring ownership by leasing costs more than the retailer's cash price. Visit progleasing.com to get started today.
Yeah, you're right. You know, that term alpha gets thrown around a lot, and that might not be the right way to phrase it. But, you know, think about back when Tom Crean was rebuilding Indiana. You know, and you had that great recruiting class with Christian Watford and Cody Zeller and Jordan Hulls and Maurice Creek. You know, he had rebuilt the talent at that point, right? And, you know, but things really changed to the next level when you brought in kind of the swagger and the confidence of Victor Oladipo and Will Sheehy, who kind of had that mentality, like you said, where they're taking control of the game when they get in there, right? Now, for better or worse, maybe earlier in their career, right, when they made a lot of mistakes. And, you know, these, obviously, Huchefino, Tamar Bates, they are higher level recruits than those guys, should be able to come right in and produce at a more efficient level early on, but still kind of have that same mentality where it's just like, well, okay, these guys are a little bit different, you know, in mentality. And then they obviously meshed well with everybody else who was around, and we know what happened with the teams moving forward. But you've got to have some of that. And I think it's something that's been missing from the program. Yeah. And it's, you know, it feels like it's Miller Kopp is a guy like that, who I think has some of that we're learning, you know, and that's kind of what Indiana has needed. And so let's talk a little bit about Jalen Huchefino as a player. Yeah. You know, now look, neither one of us are recruiting experts, but I think we've read enough and seen enough to at least be able to give kind of a general overview of what he brings. And, you know, you all know whenever I do these, I always see, you know, Indiana recruits kind of through the prism of past players. I like to just kind of make some of those comparisons just because it gives a frame of reference, not because it's ever a perfect comparison. You know, but Huchefino as a guard, to me, he's a bigger guard. He's like 6'5". And when you ask him in interviews, you know, people ask him, like, who is your game? You know, who do you play like? And the guy he often says is Jason Kidd. And that's not an awful comparison. You know, he's got a really good mid-range jump shot. You know, not a great three-point shot, but kind of a capable three-point shooter. But he's a really good passer, and he's got a clear bias toward attacking the defense and getting into the lane. Like, almost, you watch him, and almost every time he gets the ball, his instinct is to just go as far as the defense is going to let him go. And if he can get all the way to the lane, he's going all the way to the lane. He's actually pretty crafty at finishing in the lane. Not an overly impressive athlete, but kind of a strong, sturdy build. And a little bit of like a street ball mentality when he gets around the basket, that he's got different ways that he can get the ball up on the rim and finish, which is nice to see. But he can also pull up, and he's pretty good, it seems, at, you know, reading pick and rolls and kind of making the right decision there. And then also, you know, you watch a lot of videos, you don't see a ton of defense, but from everything I've read about him, a good, solid, sturdy defender who, like all freshmen, will have to get better, you know, as a defender. But I think profiles as a guy that can probably guard three, maybe four positions because he is taller. You know, I think, you know, guys you want to think about, you know, from a mid-range game, you know, reminds you a little bit of Verdell Jones when he pulls up from the mid-range, you know, very capable there. In terms of his size and being able to rebound but be a good passer, there's a little Robert Vaden, if you guys remember Robert Vaden and what he did, you know, in a couple years at Indiana as a taller guard. But then from a mentality perspective, you know, I kind of sense some Yogi in him, just that when he's got the ball, he's in charge. And he's going to probe the defense and try and get into the teeth of the defense as much as possible and then make his decision. And one of the things he has talked about is that his coaches at Montverde kind of want him now to be more aggressive as a scorer, where he's always been a little bit more of a, you know, try and create pass to other guys. But I love that about him, that he gets the ball and he's just looking to attack, not passive. He is looking to attack. And, you know, so if you can surround him with shooters and, you know, some other guys who can be secondary attackers, he profiles obviously really good as a point guard in the Big Ten. So a lot to like. I think, you know, to me, the ceiling for him as a player is going to be determined by how good of a three-point shooter he becomes and how consistent his three-point shooting is. You know, I tried to look at some of the stats from his high school stats and his EYBL stats and the shooting numbers. They were kind of hard to find, and they were a little bit all over the place, so I don't know exactly what to think there. But Ryan will probably talk on the scouting report. You know, it seems like his form on his three-point shot is just a little bit inconsistent. You know, sometimes he's fading away. But on his mid-range, it kind of looks like everything is really buttoned up. And so that's something that a lot of guys have to adjust. Strength, he'll obviously need to get stronger. You can say that about all freshmen, but especially with how he likes to finish in the lane. And then, you know, time will tell how good he is on defense and how ready he is from day one there. But he absolutely seems like a guy that I don't think anybody would be surprised, depending on who stays and who goes, if he steps in and is starting as a freshman, or at least playing significant minutes. I think that's the expectation. And based on what you see from him, that seems fair. He's got a mature game, I guess, is what I'm saying for a high school.
He does. Well, and it's interesting because it seems like he's grown a little bit even since last year. I think, you know, most of what I was reading about him as a junior, he was listed at 6'4", 185. And then the most recent listings I've seen, now he's 6'5", 210. So, I mean, is he done growing? He's certainly filled out muscle-wise, and that's going to help. I mean, one of the descriptors I read on him was, you know, he's got a college-ready body, which is oftentimes a problem when you don't have that with high school players because they have to put on muscle. We've seen that with several IU players.
I did too, but it was in a different sense.
Right? Yeah. No, you got your college body at Gresham, yeah, as opposed to at the weight room. But you know, the idea that you have a big physical guard. I mean, 210 pounds, 6'5". I mean, that's sizable, and that's, you know, the thing I think that's most interesting about the film is he's very deliberate with all, yes, of his actions on the floor. And I am interested in seeing how that translates to the speed of the college game, because, yeah, you know, what you do see, and I think sometimes we will conflate speed and athleticism a bit too much and just assume that one leads to the other. You know, Charles Barkley was a great athlete, but he wasn't necessarily the fastest person in the world or the most, you know, the most fleet of foot. So I am interested to see how the way that that Jalen plays at the college level ends up translating. And, you know, that might be a big area of his game to work on. I am curious, I think, probably the most about his defensive abilities and what he brings to the table. It's hard to get a sense for that with a lot of players at that level. But I think playing at, you know, the prep school level, that there would have been a lot of exposure of that already because you're playing against so many other players that are of a high talent caliber. So the size will certainly help. And if you've got a situation where you've got a 6'5 or potentially 6'6 player matching up at the two or even at the three, I mean, there could be both a size and just an overall weight advantage there. And so that could potentially help. And look, ultimately, like you said, I think so much of this comes down to mentality and comes down to this idea of a player coming in and feeling confident in various aspects of their games. And that, you know, the lackluster nature of IU's backcourt play over the last few years, I think it'd be attributed more to, you know, sometimes a lack of confidence, lack of self-confidence, lack of confidence in what the offense was asking them to do. And that is going to still be the big question mark with Woodson's offense as we see what that looks like. But if this is the kind of player that Woodson feels like he should bring in to play his offense, that's a good sign, because this is the type of player you'd like to see in the backcourt, because this is the type of player that can win you physical battles and ultimately win you, you know, games and championships.
Yeah, you brought up a good point there about the athleticism too. That was one thing I was thinking watching him is, you know, it clearly is really important for him to be able to get into the lane, as it is for any ball handler, you know. And again, he doesn't jump off the page as this great athlete. Like, he doesn't have the first step that Victor had, say, you know. So how does that translate to college? And I'm sure there will be a transition period for him as he's going up against even more athletic guys and he's improving his own athleticism. You know, that'll probably be something that he'll have to adjust to, because he won't be able to just get in the lane quite as quickly in college as he is, you know, clearly in high school. But boy, he does a whole lot of things to be excited about. Good passer, good vision, all those things are real positives for him. You know, I remember a time when, you know, a recruit like this would commit and you'd start having fun projecting out rosters and rotations like a year, 2 years, 3 years in advance, when you had some reasonable expectation of what a future roster might be. And now that just seems silly, because who knows, you know, like, is Xavier Johnson going to come back? You know, what, you know, could Tamar Bates blow up and go to the NBA? Like, who, you know, people transfer. I mean, it's just, rosters are so transient these days that it's really hard to project forward. I would say when you look at the types of guys that go professional early, he doesn't strike me as the profile of a one and done. Doesn't mean he couldn't be that. You know, same with Tamar. Both of those guys seem like they'll be at least 2 year players at a minimum. Timelines can change. You know, yeah, we know that, and that's with transfers and with, you know, going to the pros. But, you know, it's interesting. I think one of the questions that people are going to naturally ask about this is, wow, you know, another high-profile guard, you know, what does this mean for Christian Lander? who was such a big recruit for Indiana for so many reasons, because he was a really talented player, you know, comes from the state of Indiana, reclassifies, and then obviously has the struggles that he has, you know, last year. And, you know, we're having this conversation now, you know, just on the heels of him not playing a ton in the Bahamas. And I think what it does is it really allows the coaching staff to be patient with Christian Lander's development. Whereas when you left last season, you really kind of looked at it as, okay, well, without knowing what other pieces get filled in, boy, he's got to develop a ton for this team to have a chance because we need guard play. Well, now that's not necessarily the case. Now, the question is, you know, how patient does Christian Lander want to be with his own development? But the staff is now, you know, whereas last year you kind of felt like you had to rush him in some before he was ready because you just needed some playmaking help. You just needed a spark. That's not the case now. But, you know, is his talent going to be able to develop where he's the player that you think he's going to be? It's going to have to now because there's a lot of talented players on the roster. But it's no longer a necessity. You can be patient with it because you've actually got some other guys, some other talented players who can do some of the things he can do. That's what we talked about with Lander a lot of times last year. It's like, well, he can do stuff that no one else on the roster can do. You got to give him a chance. But now you've got some other guys who can do some of those things. So it just changes the equation a little bit, I think, for them and maybe how they handle his development.
Yeah, I mean, and we've got Dustin here who can give us a lot more on him in particular. I will say one thing real quick on that front. I don't know that there's a discussion point about the IU basketball program that interests me less right now than Christian Lander's spot on the roster. Wow. I think it was a bigger point last year, but I think the roster construction has been bad the last several years. Now that doesn't mean that Christian Lander can't turn into a very good player down the road. But at this point, I think the cream will rise to the top with whatever roster there is. And I'm not that look in an era where you have freedom of player movement, in an era where you're bringing transfers in on a regular basis, in an era where you're oftentimes remaking entire rosters on the fly. I know a lot of people were psychologically and emotionally invested in Lander being a huge part of the IU roster, but that was a different regime. It was a different mentality about how to build a program. And I almost even argue that when that commitment happened, it was still not quite fully the era of transfers in the way that they're working right now in terms of roster remaking and everything in the post-COVID era. So look, I wish everybody on the roster nothing but the best of success, and I hope that they develop into the best versions of themselves while they're in college. But I also think that ultimately if a player is good enough to be on the floor, they're going to end up on the floor. And if not, we spend more time talking about the lowest ranges of the roster now than we ever did 20, 25 years ago. And I don't know that that's necessarily for the better.
Are you saying Malcolm Sims wasn't constantly being talked about in 1993? That wasn't.
I'm very much. I think, and I've never met Malcolm. I'm not even sure if he's still in basketball. But I think if he hadn't been on the schedule poster, I don't know that most IU fans would have known that they existed. You know, so that it is an interesting era that we live in now from that perspective as well.
Yes.
Want to hear something amazing? Discover matches all the cash back you earn on your credit card at the end of your first year automatically. Dollar for dollar, with no limit on how much you can earn. Extra cash? Come on, how amazing is that? In fact, it's even more amazing when you realize all the places where Discover is accepted. 99% of places in the U.S. that take credit cards. So when it comes to Discover, get used to hearing yes more often. Learn more at discover.com/yes. 2021 Nielsen Report. Limitations apply.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
When you need auto parts, O'ReillyAuto.com is just a few clicks away. We offer convenient options for you to get your parts quickly. Order online and pick up for free at your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store. We'll even bring it out curbside. Or you can have your parts delivered right to your door with free shipping on most orders over $35. Visit O'ReillyAuto.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
With over 30,000 partner retail locations nationwide, Progressive Leasing has helped more than 7 million people with imperfect credit get the things they need. With Progressive Leasing, you can enjoy convenient, flexible lease-to-own purchase options on furniture, laptops, headphones, jewelry, mobile phones, appliances, mattresses, and more. Get what you need when you need it. Progressive Leasing offers lease-to-own purchase options, acquiring ownership by leasing costs more than the retailer's cash price. Visit progleasing.com to get started today.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, joining us from the Herald Times. The great Dustin Dupirak. Dustin, congratulations. And
thank you.
Welcome back to the show.
Being back in the old gig. Yeah, appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me on as always.
Heck yeah. So what is your what's your initial reaction to the Jalen Hood-Schifino commitment?
Well, yeah, no, I mean, big get, obviously. I mean, I think it definitely is one of those things that just sort of keeps momentum going. And just it's not that necessarily things had slowed, but you kind of come out of the gate with a lot of big hits, both in the transfer portal, and then you get to Mar Bates, who's a five-star guy. And it slows a little bit. You kind of go a while without really hearing Indiana doing anything big. But I thought Caleb Banks was a really big get myself. I still think that guy has a chance to be special. I mean, I'm not sure what holds him back. I guess I keep looking at film and thinking, what is the downside of this guy? Why is he still, from a rankings perspective, sitting around in the 120s? I mean, I guess it's a lack of what's the word I'm looking for? I don't know that he's assertive enough yet as a sort of big dog guy based on what everybody is saying, how coaches talk about him. I think they're like, he's not used to knowing that he's got to be the guy. He's just figuring this part out, which might be an issue for the future where you have a situation where maybe he's lacking in, killer instinct or whatever. It might just be him growing into it. And then in a couple of years, you're seeing him as an All-Big Ten caliber player. I think the latter is certainly possible. But, you hadn't necessarily seen a big sort of win on the radar from Mike Woodson in a minute. It feels like longer than it really is. But this is definitely one that stands up and makes everybody look like, whoa, hey, and because you're not just getting a five-star guy, it's getting a five-star guy out of a Monteverde Academy, a guy who grew up in Pittsburgh, lived in Charlotte. He's one of these more sort of transient players that is becoming more of the norm in 21st century basketball. It's not all guys that grew up in the same area and are a big deal. I mean, they're used to being able to get in-state players like this. They're not necessarily used to getting out-of-state players like this. Again, guys at Monteverde who are getting literally every single school coming in the door to try to recruit their guys. So it's a recruit that matters from that perspective, from the just overall Mike Woodson momentum perspective. How what is this guy going to be? Are people going to want to play for him? But just from an on the court perspective, I mean, like you imagine Hood-Schifino and Bates together for a year. And that's really, really dynamic. The guy obviously can score, he can pass. Basically what you keep hearing from, I know Eric Bossy was saying it on the announcement. I talked to his AAU coach Norton Hurd last night, and he said the same thing, was that he is a point guard at heart. He wants to get guys involved. You see some of that in his tape, a guy who wants to pass the ball, wants to involve people. Good chance you're going to see that this year. I mean, imagine at Charlotte, he was probably the guy. At Monteverde, there's going to be a lot of dudes. I mean, I think he's the fourth ranked player in the class on his team. He's 23rd, jeez, and there are three guys ahead of him on this team just in the class of 22. They probably have more dudes in 2023. I mean, like, you just presume that there's an endless string of top 10, top 20 talent coming into Monteverde at this point. I call it Monteverde. I don't know. I have no idea how you actually pronounce it. The point of the matter,
I'm not sure. Monteverde just sounds weird. It seems too abrupt.
Yeah, it sounds like Mount Bird, and it's more like I thought it was Monteverde. I thought there'd be some sort of Latin language to it. Galen's talking.
Can we just call it Green Mountain? Would that be
easier? I think that's what it means, right? I mean, I think that's what they're getting at. I don't know if there are any green mountains in Florida, but okay. But yeah, I mean, I think he's going to have to learn to distribute. He's going to have to distribute in this role that he's going to be in this year. I think he's going to have to start at point because I think Sky Clark, their top 10 kid, had an ACL tear in July. So he's going to have to be the guy at point guard. And he's going to have to put the ball in hands of, ball in hands of guys like Duke Whitehead, who's going to Duke. And some, I don't know, there's some other loaded players in that team that I'm forgetting. But I think he's going to fit what they want well. He's going to be a guy that's, I think, going to do well in a position where he's asked to be creative as a point guard and play in an open floor. He seems to really fit what Indiana wants. Indiana seems to really fit what he wants. It's just it is a really, I think, really big, important get for Mike Woodson at this stage in his beginning.
What do you think keeps him from being a five-star? Is it the lack of upper-tier athleticism and the inconsistent three-point shot? Because those kind of seem to be the two things that stand out that would, probably separate him from like a surefire five stars.
Yeah, no, I think so. I think the shot is something that he's been working on that wasn't always there. Apparently, from what I've heard, it's something that is coming along. He's not necessarily a lights out shooter, but you see the range is there. You see he's capable of making the shot. You know, as you know, Norton Hurd told me last night. He says, you leave Hood Schifino open. Good luck. You know, if that's how you think you're going to play him, go for it. Give it a shot. See how that treats you. It's not going to treat you particularly well. Now, does that mean he's going to hit 40% with a hand in his face? Probably not. But you know, he is a guy that's got the range, got the ability to shoot the basketball. One of those point guards that can score at all three levels, and that really matters. And that's something that Indiana hasn't had an abundance of. Armand Franklin was a guy who could do that last year. I think Tamar Bates is a guy who might be able to do that. Johnson, to a degree, maybe kind of. He's not a by any means a consistent 3-point shooter, but Hood Schifino is probably more of that. And I think his athleticism is very good. I don't think it's off the charts good. I think that's what's holding him back from being, you know, in that Sky Clark, Duke Whitehead, you know, one and done certainty kind of level.
Man, to your point about that roster,
they might not need a guy who, you know, they could use him for 2 years. You know, that's not the worst case scenario, is have a dude that is not in and out immediately. That's more along the Trace Jackson Davis scale of get there. You know, obviously he's thinking NBA the whole time, but you have a chance to keep him and develop him instead of knowing you're going to lose him right out of the gate.
Absolutely. You know, you brought up a good point too about just the roster depth at Montverde. And Galen, I think you alluded to this. You know, one of the nice things, especially I think, as you're rebuilding a culture like Mike Woodson is, when you bring in guys where they're playing on rosters that loaded in high school, they clearly are not averse to competition because they've had to do it. Like, they haven't just been the guys on their high school teams that are, you know, given the ball, their spot is set because they're clearly the best player. And there's certainly something that you learn from that about being the leader and being the top guy. But in terms of preparing you for college, you know, going to these prep schools and playing with rosters that are loaded with college players, I mean, you got to bring it every day in practice just to get on the court. And that, I think, has to help, you know, getting more guys like that in there has to help, you know, kind of rebuild the culture of competition and, you know, just kind of earning your spot. And, you know, so I think that'll be a positive too, for the staff, bringing in a guy like Hood Schifino.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's a very interesting, I think, I mean, these are the sort of schools that have only existed for so long, right? I mean, there's obviously a place like Oak Hill, but it's just a different level of recruitment going on. You know, the IMGs, all the mirrors, you know, it's just not anything normal like we're used to. I mean, even what you see in like kind of DC and New Jersey Catholic schools, there's something like that. There's some, you know, similarity, but this is another level when basically your season is based on this tournament you go to at the end of the year and everybody's there. And there's just such a loaded group, and it is like college. It is probably a boarding school. You're probably actually living out of a dorm at 16 or 17 or whatever. So much of what you're going to have to do that you're beginning. And there's probably, I'm sure there's some things that you miss. I'm sure that there are things that if you're, you know, like, if you're an Indiana public school, if you're a DC Catholic school or something like that, you'll say, you know, this is what you're missing. There's something else to this. There's more of, there's more rivalry here. You know, there's more of a microscope on you where they're sort of not at these schools. You know, that you're sort of in a separate place, and you know, I mean, everybody knows you're there. But you know, is anyone covering your games necessarily? It's just a different universe that anything that we're used to seeing. But like you said, the competition is so high, they're going to have to get used to this. I mean, Hood Schifino is not going to play with a guy who is as ranked as the guys he's going to play with at Montverde. You know, unless Indiana gets somebody a couple of years from now, when he walks in the door, there's not going to be a player that was, you know, he will be at, you know, probably the highest rated guy as far as how he was recruited when he gets to Indiana. So he's going to be used to more than what he's seeing there. And that's going to be pretty wild. I mean, he's probably going to be asked to do more and score more and call his own number more when he gets to Indiana than he will be at Montverde this year.
It's so early in the NIL era, and we know that NIL is going to affect recruiting because in some ways it brings some of the stuff that used to be under the table above the table in a perfectly legal way now. Right. Do you get any sense? Have you heard anything about how that's affecting, you know, recruitments like Jalen Hood Schifino's, which obviously the recruitment started under the old rules and now things have changed so quickly. Do you know or get a sense of how that's affecting things at all?
And I think the thing is that there are just so many moving parts to this. I think people were just starting to get the question, you know, figure out what questions to ask. You know, for one, I think Indiana can at least check the boxes of, you know, we have been dedicating time to getting ready for this. You know, we're investing in finding ways of making sure your brand is as good as it can be. You know, we're partnering with Open Doors and these kind of companies to get you ready. And so that, I think, is the baseline basic, though. I mean, I think that's, you know, Indiana's not the only ones that are doing that. I think they were ahead of the game on that, but everybody else did it too. Eventually. I don't know if Indiana was first. I don't know who was first. But I think Indiana's been preparing this for a year. But I mean, I think everybody else has been at least preparing it for it for 6 months. I don't know that. And I don't know that there's that much of a head start. I don't know that there's that much you can do. I think it just, you know, it is hitting the air now. And that's the thing, is like for whatever, you know, whatever you were going to do to prepare it, like you had to sort of put it out in the world and figure out where it was going to go, who was going to call, who was going to want you to do things, what kind of time that was going to take out of your day, what kind of return on investment there was going to be. I think it you won't know for, I don't think, a year, at least, maybe more than that. You know, what best practices are, and two, you know, like, I don't know if parents are gonna know what questions to ask. I mean, I think they know that this is something that matters, that it's important. But you're just not gonna know all the moving parts of like what actually leads to somebody maximizing, their value on NIL. I mean, I think they know it is important to show that you're trying. It is important to show that you've thought of this, that you care about the athletes being able to maximize their, you know, revenue potential, their income potential out of this. I think if right now, if you show them you care, then you're on the level. You know, then that's about as on the level as you can be. It's a year from now, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, when you start to get a sense of what markets perform well. You know, what I think we've had a lot of talk of, well, what will ultimately be, where will you be better off? Will you be better off in a big city where there's sort of all of these marketing opportunities? Or are you better off in a small town where you're the big fish, where, you know, like if you're in Bloomington and every car dealership in town wants to have you run an ad, whereas like in Los Angeles, okay, how big of a deal are you if you're a, you know, 4-star recruit, you know, number 50 player coming into UCLA? How much does that matter when the Lakers are there and the Dodgers are there and the Clippers are there and, you know, the Rams are there and the Chargers and everything else? Like, how much do you, how much sort of advertising revenue is there to be thrown around to a kid? Even, you know, maybe there's some from the quarterback at USC. How much is there from, again, a top 100 small forward who's going to start at UCLA, but isn't going to be an All-American? Maybe is the second team all Pac-12 guy. How much money is there for that guy? Is there more for a guy like that in Indiana? You know, that I think is going to be interesting to see how that all plays out and see what's there. You know, how much of it is just social media driven stuff anyway? How much of it is there even for schools to do, and how much does market even matter? All of that, I think, will play out over a year, 2 years. And once you see everybody know what questions to ask, then I think that is going to change the landscape and you're going to see who benefits and who doesn't. But I think right now, the most important thing is to show that you care. You're going to lose if you show you don't care. If you haven't invested in this, if you don't have a program to, again, maximize earning potential, you know, partner with some of these programs, talk to them about it. You know, like I think Tom Allen said they had a conversation about income tax. If you're not doing stuff like that to teach them about it, then you're falling behind. As long as you're doing that, you're on a level, but that will, the race will change eventually in a year when you start to see more things break down.
I just saw someone pop into the chat that said, "What is this pod about? I live in Bakersfield. This was randomly recommended." Look at that.
What is this pod about?
This is an NFT podcast, actually.
Yes. So,
yes. Yes. Crypto talk coming up next. Galen.
Yeah. It's not Bitcoin and Dogecoin. I don't even know what
they're
called. Go on.
Ethereum, Dustin. Come on. Get with the program.
That's
here.
Right.
I know it's a thing. I don't know what it is. Go on. Anyway.
Galen, what sense do you get about that and kind of the impact that, you know, I mean, it's a brave new world here in recruiting.
I mean, I don't know if it's having that much of an impact. I think you don't want to go somewhere where there's no program that you can take advantage of in terms of just having advice or having assistance. But I also would say that, you know, you're going to get wildly varying aspects of that pretty much everywhere across the country. And, you know, you've got opportunities that don't exist in some places that do in others, but I don't think it had much of an effect here because, you know, it wasn't even on the books 3 years ago, but Kenya Hunter was recruiting Jalen Hood-Schifino, and that seems to be the most important pass-through line on all of this. And so, look, I do think it'll have some effects in some spots as we go along with things, but I also would say that at this point, it's so uncertain and nobody really knows what the marketplace actually looks like, and Dustin kind of alluded to that. You could go somewhere that looks dynamite on paper and then you get there and it's actually not, but that may not necessarily matter because it's not something that has to be limited to local. It can be regional or national or what have you. And so I think it's probably, if you, like, some parents may not want to send their kid, or some kids may not want to go to a school that's just like, well, we're not going to let you do this any more than we absolutely have to. But most places that are in this game right now with recruiting, I don't think are having those sorts of conversations.
Yeah, nobody seems stupid about this. I mean, it's just like, if someone is not even promising you, like, I think schools are smart enough to know, we're not going to deny you money that is yours, that is available to you, and think that we're going to recruit you. Like, you have power, you have the ability to choose where you want. And if we're going to tell you that you can't make money here, we're going to lose you. And you tack on also the transfer portal and the fact that there's not a penalty for leaving, and just everything that changes that way. There's just no earthly reason as a school for you to say, no, you can't do this. Now, they might suggest, like, hey, look, like, you got to get good before you're going to make any money. So you might want to wait on really pushing this and put your time into being good. But, you know, the opportunity will be there when you get good. And I think, to Galen's point, obviously, you know, the big money is in making the next level.
Right.
You know, that's where the big money is. I mean, like, there's money here. It's, you know, and obviously there are people that are making real money out of this that they're going to be able to, not necessarily, you're not paying your grandkids tuition with it, but, you know, you're setting yourself up very, very well to get started. But if you want generational money, you want to go be a pro. And that ultimately is the big decision you make, is saying, is this person who's coaching me going to turn me into professional? If that's something that I see is possible for me, you know, who is that guy? And that's obviously what Hood-Schifino was deciding. I want to be an NBA player. I look at Mike Woodson as an NBA coach. I feel like he can tell me how to get from point A to point B, and everything else that I managed to make in between helps. That's nice. But the money that I can make out of college and out of NIL is not nearly what I'm going to make if I get to the NBA and stay there. You know, good there's point. A lot more cash there. And it's like, so I do think that players know that. And again, what is the first thing on their minds? First thing on their minds is, who can make me a pro? I'd like to be, they all would like to be pros to some extent in college, you know, as much as they can. But the big piece is, can you be a professional at the next level? You know, because that's a different level. That is, you know, that's money that you can send your great, great grandkids to school for.
Yeah. So next up on the list now for Indiana is Noah Clowney, who is the next target for the class of 2020, power forward from South Carolina, who it seems like Indiana has a pretty good shot with. He's another guy the 24/7 Sports Composite has him 70th, 24/7 Sports has him 111th. But I mean, I think, kind of like Caleb Banks, he's regarded as being much more talented and having a much higher ceiling than that recruiting listing may suggest. Dustin, do you have any insight on that recruitment and where Indiana stands with him? Because my goodness, if Indiana can land Clowney too.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's been a while since I talked to him. I think it was July, you know, so when I was still working for Daily Hoosier. And I can't remember if it was June or July when I got a hold of him. But, you know, he seemed very, very interested, and he seemed like he really fit. And from talking to the coaches around him, it seemed like Mike Woodson really wanted him, was really impressed. I think one quote I got from I think as AAU coach, as he said, Woodson was like, coach, I don't know what he can't do, but I'd rather find out in my program than someplace else. Basically, it's so, like, just the, like, there's a lot of growth. I mean, I think, really, I saw a lot of similarities, not in exactly the way they play, but in what their coaches said about them between, really the Rosemond recruits, which was Banks, Phillips, Clowney. Those are kind of the three guys that Yossier, like, right out of the gate, they had offered, because Yossier was like, I think these guys are really good. I've been around them being in Atlanta. You know, I've crossed paths with these players. These are players that you want. And I think it seemed like all of them sort of were, you know, the coaches talked about them similarly, and the connections sounded very, very similar. First off, it's just that fact, you know, these guys go back with Yossier. Like, this isn't, something that just started when he got this job. The dude knows everybody in the Southeast, as far as I can tell. And you know, he is extremely clued in there. But you know, it sounded by all accounts to me that it was you know that they're in really good shape with him. I think he's, you know, obviously he's down to four, and I think all of those schools have a good argument for him too. I heard Virginia Tech is doing pretty well in that recruitment as well. You know, I'm really impressed by him as a player, by what you've seen on tape, by what his coaches say about him. Has a little range, has a little face up game. But just has off the charts athleticism, really good shot blocker, really good rim runner, you know, just really athletic, big with chance to sort of spread out his skill set. Good handle for a big man, ability to pass the ball. You know, again, really good shot blocker, can defend a lot of positions too, is a guy that you don't have a problem with in a pick and roll, getting switched onto a one and being able to sort of trap that and blitz that and kind of stop that from getting past him. You know, just looks like a really, really good athlete. Seems like he would be a really good fit. I think out of every, you know, I know Malik Renaud, I think, you know, trimmed his list down to seven, and Indiana's on that. But I think Clowney's got to be you know, just the main target now. And I think if Clowney and Banks like maximize themselves, you know, if everything it sounds like they're capable of comes to fruition, I think they got a chance to be really, really good players.
So, Galen, I want to let you get back to raking Kevin Warren over the coals here on Twitter.
I think I've proven I can do both at the same time.
Maybe we'll get into a little bit of
that. It's so easy for Galen to do it that he doesn't even have to.
Yeah, think. I don't. Yeah, I'm using like 5% of my brain on this right now.
So. Apparently, he is too. So let me ask you guys this question as kind of a concluding question for this conversation. You know, because one of the difficult things, you know, when you have a new coach, right? Everything is kind of fresh and new. The coach always has some type of compelling narrative that he can spin, and there's no real counter to it because it's blue ocean. Like it has, you know, there's no wins or losses yet, right? This is true with Archie Miller. This is true with Mike Woodson. It's true with almost any new coach, especially in a place like Tom Crean, especially in a place like Indiana, where the program sells itself. And now the coach can come layer his own narrative on top of it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, at the beginning of that, you're kind of trying to separate what's signal and what's noise, right? You know, there was a lot of excitement at the beginning of Archie Miller's tenure, but that turned out to be more noise than it was signal. You know, when it came to Tom Crean, eventually that, you know, that obviously worked for a while and then didn't. So I'm just curious, and I liken it a little bit to Michigan too with Juwan Howard. You know, he came in and made a huge splash, made a lot of good hires, got a lot of big recruits. I wasn't buying it, but he's proven to be pretty darn good, and he's, you know, he's sustaining what John Beilein built there. So I'm curious, Galen, I'll go to you first. You know, what sense do you get after a few months of Mike Woodson? You know, obviously things have been good, right? Is what you're seeing suggesting to you that it's more signal or kind of, you know, more noise? Like, are you seeing things that are sustainable that you're really buying into?
Yeah.
I know it's a difficult question to ask, but just...
Here's the thing. I think Tom Crean's pitch was all about trying to tell players what he thought they could do. I think Archie Miller, to some degree, was like telling players that I have a system that will work. Maybe there's a little bit of that in there, and I don't know the exact wording or whatever. I'm just trying to go off the overall aura.
He was more telling them what not to do.
But I think here's the thing. Everything I've heard about Woodson and all the reports I get on interactions with him is just he exudes cool. He exudes not cool like, hey, I'm not stressed, but like he is like legitimately a cool guy. He is someone people want to be around. He has a gravitational pull to him. It's both authoritative, but also almost paternal, with a bit of just street cred thrown in for good measure. And you can go to this guy and hear him talk, and I think he'll tell you what you need to hear, but he'll do it in a way that makes you want to hear it. And that really resonates, I think, with a lot of the players that IU needs in order to get to the level of competitiveness. Now, you know, we've seen Archie Miller brought in good players, Tom Crean brought in good players, but they struggled to bring in enough of those players in the case of Crean. It was always like the cream was up here, and then you had this group of players that might pan out, and most of them didn't to the degree that they needed to. And for Archie Miller, I don't think he brought in enough players that worked well with each other or with his system. both of those things are still kind of in question with Woodson. But as of right now, what I see is a guy who's able to walk in and have a message and have an atmosphere around him that is appealing to players that are at the upper levels of the high school talent base. And it seems like that's more consistent. Like even in the recruits that they've missed out on, they've been in the final five for some pretty good targets. I think we'll see more of that increase as time goes by. So for me, I think it is sustainable. I think it's very unique. I mean, Woodson is a very unique figure, one of the top scorers in the history of the program he's coaching at, but all of his successes that he can point to recruits are going to be the things that he did with the Knicks or the things that he did with the Hawks. And he's able to approach things in a way, I think, that just – and it's fascinating to me because, like, I have this theory that I've been tossing back and forth with people, like how differently people age now. You know, Woodson, when he took over the IU program, was older than Bob Knight was when he got fired by like 2 years. And yet Woodson feels like he's 15 years younger than Knight was at that point. Not even Knight, like when he was on TV in 2010, but like Knight in 2000. He just feels significantly younger. He feels like he relates so much better. And certainly looks like and feels like he relates better on the recruiting trail than either of the previous two coaches did. So I'm so far pretty optimistic about what we're seeing.
This is a great day for Mike Woodson and his family.
Yes, Dustin, same question to you.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely signal as opposed to noise. Like that's sort of definitely where I like come down on sort of the halves of that. You know, like you said, I think as much as anything, like Archie Miller sort of reminded me that like breaks are just really important. You know, there is an extent to which you got to be fortunate in this game. And I think he put together a what looked like a really good class on paper in 2018, did not pan out almost at all, almost entirely. And so, you know, we do too, Lisa. Just things can go wrong and you could find yourself, you have a plan and then, you know, it's like you have a plan and then you get punched in the face. What happens? And that is kind of always sort of the question that comes out. I mean, I think there are right now, everybody's really happy to be there. Everybody is thrilled to be there. You know, Trace Jackson Davis is talking about like every day is rays of sunshine in Cook Hall right now. What happens when you lose? What happens when it doesn't come together as fast as you want? The good part is that the part that's sustainable, obviously, is they're playing a style that all of basketball is playing and is fun. Basically like they more or less coaches in general have gotten out of the way of letting basketball be fun and just letting guys play the way they want to play. And and because that's happening everywhere and you don't feel like you're making a mistake by running and shooting a bunch of threes and playing wide open basketball. You know, that's what everybody's doing. That's what everybody sort of has to do. Everybody's leaning this way. And so it is an easy sell right now. And Mike Woodson is, you know, he's been in the NBA. He knows this is what they want. He can just bring it over and it's fun. It's not like you're bringing over an old grinded out style of basketball in the NBA and saying, you guys need to learn how to grind. It's really fun up there. Wait till you see how it looks in college, you know? And so that makes it kind of an easy sell. Now the issue comes is what if they can't shoot, what if they can't make threes? What if the floor does not spread out for them? What if it doesn't work? Right now, they still only have two shooters that I think they can really trust in Miller, Kopp, and Parker Stewart. I think those are two guys that are proven anywhere else of being guys that can hit three-point shots, you know, continuously. So if you're, you know, even if you're playing four out, one in, if the opponents are defending you like you're a two-post team because they're not going to send four guys out to the perimeter to guard you, if they're not going to go guard Race Thompson out to 22 feet, you know, how does that change when you're not winning as much? You know, okay, when it's like, whoa, I thought this was supposed to work. What happens then? That's a different ballgame. Now, haven't played any games yet. Might work out perfectly. They might have a great, you know, sort of counter for that or way to operate, even if they're not getting threes out of the four position. They might still be fine. They might make adjustments that might work. It might all come together. But there's still a lot that can go wrong, obviously. But at this point, if everything is going right, and what's sustainable is, I think basketball is going to continue to go this way. And if you don't win this year, and you continue to recruit for a four out one in team, and you keep saying this is how we're going to play, this is how we're, you know, it wears a little thin if you can't do it immediately. But if you get there, eventually people forget that you weren't there when you started. People will forget that you had to adjust the roster you had at the beginning. If you eventually put together a team that can run, that can shoot, that can play wide open, and you keep selling that and you eventually get enough people to believe that this is how you're going to play. And then you start playing that way. Then you can continue to recruit players because they're going to keep wanting to do that. It is, you know, even if there is a counter to it, then more people start grinding it out, but you keep it wide open, you know, like, you're still going to be able to recruit talent because that's how kids want to play, because that is fun basketball.
Well said. I think we underrate that Mike Woodson won in Atlanta and New York.
He did.
It's
important. It's important.
Well, some of us don't underrate it. Some of us have been talking about it. Other hosts who occasionally make appearances on the show underrate that. But I'll talk with him about that on Thursday night.
Welcome back to the quickest podcast ever, brought to you by Kohl's.
Today's topic, fall style.
Wait, wasn't it just June?
Right? So I went to Kohl's.
Of course you did.
I got a cute Cara Santana for Nine West sweater for 25% off and a great pair of Vans.
Love Vans.
And save 25% on a Champion hoodie for my husband.
Ooh, sounds cozy.
You should go. You'll get 15% off or 15, 20, or even 30% off with a Kohl's card.
BRB.
Select styles. Offers end September 26th. Champion coupons do not apply. Some exclusions apply. See store or kohls.com for details.
Want to hear something amazing? Discover matches all the cash back you earn on your credit card at the end of your first year, automatically, dollar for dollar, with no limit on how much you can earn. Extra cash? Come on, how amazing is that? In fact, it's even more amazing when you realize all the places where Discover is accepted. 99% of places in the U.S. that take credit cards. So when it comes to Discover, get used to hearing yes more often. Learn more at discover.com/yes. 2021 Nielsen report. Limitations apply.
With over 30,000 partner retail locations nationwide, Progressive Leasing has helped more than 7 million people with imperfect credit get the things they need. With Progressive Leasing, you can enjoy convenient, flexible lease-to-own purchase options on furniture, laptops, headphones, jewelry, mobile phones, appliances, mattresses, and more. Get what you need when you need it. Progressive Leasing offers lease-to-own purchase options, acquiring ownership by leasing costs more than the retailer's cash price. Visit progleasing.com to get started today.
Hey, Galen, you want to give us 2 minutes on what the hell's going on with the, what are we calling it, the Big 32? Is it the PAC? What is this new
I think actually the accepted title is Sum 41 because...
No,
I didn't make that up. Someone else made it up. But, anyway, yeah, there was a press conference that was just jointly held by the commissioners of the Big Ten, Pac-12, and ACC about this alliance that we've heard. That's it. That's the tweet. I mean, there was nothing came out of it by Dustin. They essentially came out and said that we have an agreement in principle to have like a scheduling agreement, but there's no signed contract. All three gentlemen went out of their way to say, well, you know, we trust each other, so there's no contract, which, now, you know what? As I said on Twitter, this now really explains why Kevin Warren so eagerly put Ohio State in the Big Ten title game in football last year, if that's his attitude towards agreements. But yeah, it's... unfortunately, I don't know. We'll see. Maybe there's some grand plan going on behind the scenes here that the three conferences have up their sleeve. But it certainly looks like something that was rushed out without a whole lot being attached to it and doesn't really seem to address a whole lot in terms of the power imbalances that are starting to pop up in college athletics. But we'll see.
We will see. So, okay. Whatever. It's a good day for Indiana basketball. Let's focus on that.
You know, I mean, it's
who knows what happens in the broader ecosystem of college sports. Although when I did see that, you know, the Big Ten, the Pac-12, and the ACC were going to have some announcement, of course, thinking it was going to be interested. All I could think about is the remnants of the Big 12 just doing their Michael Cera walk somewhere in the American Southwest.
I think we've deduced that despite everybody saying the contrary, nobody really cares about the Big 12. Sorry, Big 12. And also, you know, it's like this is, I don't know, who knows what the effect this is going to have or anything. It's very strange. But there's just the interest in power balance in college sports generally just extend to what's currently in your house. And there's not much of it. You know, you're going to lose 15 or 20 teams off the bottom. Unfortunately, eventually you're going to get to a point where that's going to start affecting some of the teams in the conferences that have decided to ally today. So we'll see if they've got something else up their sleeve, but the press conference today did not look good.
Do you, last question for you. Like, we kind of have a bias toward the times that we live in to say that, you know, a proximity bias to the current time where we think right. that, you know, it's the craziest time and there's the most upheaval. And this kind of feels like for college sports, though, this is a pretty seismic, like, moment, doesn't it? With NIL, well, with all the conference realignment.
It is. And a lot of that you got to keep in mind is because so many of the structures of college sports should have organically evolved over the course of time. But there's been consistent efforts on the part of the people in charge of college sports really since 2000 or so, when television money started to increase and things really started to get professionalized on the business side of things, to keep the status quo. And the idea was, hey, let's hoover up all of this cash that we're getting from our television partners and our corporate sponsors, but let's keep the financial arrangement so that we don't have to give money to the players. We don't have to pay taxes. We don't have to do all of these other things that businesses normally have to do when they're earning that much money. And so, yes, it is a seismic set of changes that seems like it's happening a short period of time, but there have been so many things that have happened over the last 12 years, really since that last big round of realignment. You've had attempts at unionization. You've had, you know, NIL and just player rights in general slowly working their way through the court system. And it just kind of so happened that a bunch of stuff hit at once. And I think the pandemic, frankly, had a lot to do with that, because a lot of colleges and a lot of conferences were suddenly like, whoa, we don't have as much money as we thought we were going to have. We got to start doing some things here. And so, yeah, it is a big time of change. But I do think that part of that is just stuff being suppressed far longer than it should have been and not being allowed to go organically. And also the pandemic really decided to, you know, hit the accelerator pedal on some of this stuff.
And bring it back to the subject of the show, Jalen Hood-Schifino. Is Scott more likely to call him Jalen Rose-Schifino or Jalen Hurts-Schifino first?
He's liable to just call him Jalen Schifino, because as we learned with Hanner Mascara Perea, Scott's allergic to, like, announcing people's full names. It's fascinating to me. I'm glad I have a relatively simple name, or I would have spent the last 12 years having my name just, you know, essentially cut in half for no good reason.
Well, Galen, thanks for jumping on short notice. This is an exciting day for Indiana basketball. Jalen Hood-Schifino is a really good player. I think he's the type of player we're all going to really enjoy watching. He's got just a complete game, kind of an old school game in some ways, but a new school mentality. And I think, man, if he and Tamar Bates are your backcourt, you're starting out pretty well. You fill in some pieces around those two talents and you got a chance to be pretty good.
It's a really nice early birthday present for me. And it's also just it's a great step for the program. And again, I think being able to have what is like a top 10 recruiting class, maybe higher, we'll see what the final number ends up being. That's really impressive. And that is something that is a good way to start off your time at IU for Mike Woodson. And so I'm really excited to see what they're able to build off of on this, but I'm happy to be able to enjoy this as the beginning of things, because it does portend stuff going in a really good direction.
Oh, hey, last thing. You and Scott have some events coming up. You want to mention those real quick?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Know when those are happening?
Yeah. Though the big one, if you're in Bloomington, and we're going to have social media stuff on this sometime this week. I'll probably put something out today. But we'll be live at Switchyard in Bloomington, 6 o'clock on Monday of next week, on the 30th of August. We'll be doing a live show talking IU football. So if you're in the area, please feel free to come by, support the podcast and support the folks over at Switchyard. And we'll be having all of our IU football podcasts coming up over the course of the next couple of weeks as well. Scott's been burning up the airwaves. Adam Rittenberg was on earlier. We had a big tailgate episode. I did hear, by the way, that there might still be some limited concrete parking lot passes still available. You just need to call the ticket office. I got the checkup on that. So I didn't want to scare people. I also got chided by my doctor today for suggesting that somebody make a sandwich out of Pop-Tarts and bacon. So I apologized to my doctor, and I told him that I would correct my error on the podcast. So I'll be doing that on Crimson Cats as well. But certainly I don't want any of you to make that choice Please eat healthy. Don't eat Pop-Tarts with bacon. That's the message I have to bring to you all.
Eat healthy most of the time, but when you're tailgating.
Yes.
By the way, I think Jen has a great new tagline for the end of your show is instead of C on the flip side, brand name chips.
Brand name chips only. Yeah. You know, it's a funny thing. So my mother-in-law came down a couple of weeks ago to watch the kids. My wife and I went down to the IndyCar race in Nashville, and I came back and you know, she had brought some of her own food. And sure enough, there's like three bags of generic chips in the pantry right now. And I'm just like, I can't get away from this stuff, seriously. So I might bring those to the first tailgate and just hand them out to people. So
I just imagine you just like flying into just a rage.
No,
with the generic chips.
It was no. Not, I'm too gracious of a host to ever say that, you know. But
yeah,
I
but it would be like a Will Ferrell SNL skit, you know, like you just can't handle the generic chips. You just start yelling.
Why are they keep bringing me these chips? Yeah, something like that. I'm trying to get the message out early. And if people suddenly get the impression they shouldn't bring those, maybe it'll filter throughout the community. That would be ideal.
Yes. All right. Well, Galen, thanks for hopping on. Thanks for everybody for being here live. Thanks to Jalen Hood-Schifino for giving us good news to do an emergency pod about. Yes. And thanks to Kenya Hunter for being awesome. And thanks to you for listening. We will see you guys Thursday night. Expect Ryan. He's been a little bit under the weather. You know, so if you want to send him a tweet, wish him well. He's Ryan's not feeling well. So maybe make him feel a little bit better. But he should be here Thursday night with an in-depth scouting report of Jalen Hood-Schifino. So we will talk to you then. Who knows? We get another commitment from Noah Clowney. Then we'll do another one of these. See y'all. Talk to you soon.
Bye.
At California's Great America, it's never too early to start thinking about next year's fun. That's why we're offering the lowest price of the year on a 2022 Gold Pass right now. That includes unlimited visits this year, so you can enjoy the Great Pumpkin Fest, Haunt, and Winterfest. Then unlimited visits next year to try new foods, enjoy festivals like Taste of Orleans, scream on our world-class coasters, and splash away at South Bay Shores Water Park, all for just $82 plus applicable taxes and fees. Hurry! Offer ends October 31st, so get your Gold Pass now at cagreatamerica.com. It's amazing in here.